Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Michael Darda is with MKM Partners. Michael, good morning.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
These aren't recession numbers. This is a consumer that's still breathing, right?
Oh, it sure is, Tom. You know, and there's a, I think, an increasingly sturdy foundation under this. In November, we actually saw real income, less transfer payments hit a new cycle high. We know that continued now because of the December employment report. If you take the income proxy, which is just wages paid times hours worked, a new cycle high there. So these numbers shouldn't be totally surprising, but they're certainly nice to see.
You put out the report of 2013 so far yesterday. Folks, we protect the copyright of our guests. MKM Partners, 10 Misconceptions. Michael, let me go right to the one that I showed a number of our print people. Government spending has been growing at an unprecedented rate. You really push back. You just say wrong.
Well, that's not exactly, Tom. So that seems to be the perception out there. And the reason for that is there was a ramp in government spending as a share of GDP during the recession. But since the recovery started, we've had gridlock in Washington. And if you look at total government spending in real terms, last year it fell at the fastest rate since the Eisenhower administration. So the data doesn't lie.
Is it falling because of exogenous issues, or is it falling because our politicians are geniuses?
Well, I'm certainly not going to go out on a limb and say our politicians are geniuses.
I wanted to make some news here.
It's a combination of factors. I mean, state and local governments have been forced to cut back. You did see a surge in federal spending during the recession. So as a moderate recovery has taken place, some of those automatic stabilizers associated with food stamps and jobless benefits
right, like
go into reverse gear. So we've actually had a moderate 3-year fiscal consolidation where the fiscal deficit has been falling about 100 basis points per annum over a 3-year period. And you know what? Nominal GDP has stayed perfectly steady thanks to Ben Bernanke at about a 4% growth rate.
Okay, but this brings up the heart of the matter, Michael, and you've been very good on this. I think of Jan Hatzius at Goldman Sachs, Jim O'Sullivan over at High Frequency, another one, the UBS crew as well. And that is, if we just get some kind of economic growth and a housing recovery that stabilizes housing and moves forward, boy, that solves a lot of problems. How much of our problems get solved with just a healing economy?
Well, Tom, I would say in terms of the, you know, the fiscal challenges that we have right now in the short term, if you look at the fiscal deficit, it's still, you know, high, about 7% of GDP. I would argue that all of that is the recession and the slow recovery in the programs that were put in place to deal with the slow recovery. Longer term, we have some structural problems that a recovery won't solve. But in the next few years, if growth really picks up, the deficit will simply melt away to, you know, low enough levels that the debt to GDP ratio.
Then why are we hysterical about the debt ceiling? What is going on? Libby Cantrell was just on with PIMCO. Why are we hysterical in Washington if Michael Dart is saying if we just heal, that'll solve the problem?
Well, I think there's been a confusion between these cyclical pressures on the debt and on deficits from the deep recession and the slow recovery in these longer term challenges, which you can't grow out of. And, you know, politicians are pretty good at confusing things, as we know, Tom. So what we have here, if the recovery picks up some steam and sustains itself over the next handful of years, the deficit will fall to more normal levels. Mm. The problem is, after about the year 2020, you start to get the interaction between demographics and rising per capita health care costs, and that does, in a structural way, push deficits back up to unsustainable levels, and growth won't solve that. But in the, you know, what we're seeing now in terms of the deficit, you know, that is cyclical. That's not structural.
Michael Darda with us from MKM Partners. Michael, there's an idea of a Keynesian solution, which is more government, or at least the idea that elites can figure things out. And on the other side is the esteemed Robert Lucas and others saying, let the market solve the problem. Who has the high ground right now? Within the debate of everything we're talking about, are the Keynesians leading the parade, or are we going to get back to the market solving problems?
Well, Tom, there's another esteemed group that flies under the banner of market monetarism. And this is, you know, sort of a evolution of the Milton Friedman idea, which is that the central bank should really be responsible for stabilizing aggregate demand. And when that doesn't happen, then you get things that look like market failure. So this group is led by Scott Sumner up at Bentley University.
Boy, he's getting press.
Yeah, and he deserves it. So, you know, that group is much more free market, but they actually agree with the Keynesians that the basic problem is a lack of aggregate demand. And so, you know, they've been supportive of the Fed taking more aggressive action, but they generally are skeptical of fiscal stimulus, and they generally also agree with some of the other free market types that, you know, higher taxes, tougher regulations will hurt the productivity supply side of the economy over the longer haul.
Nicely explained. Within that, what you're suggesting is masking these glooms is a slowdown in the arcane phrase, money velocity. What does that mean that the economy has become soggy or turgid and we need to solve that?
So, Tom, it just gets back to supply and demand. You know, there's a supply of money. The Federal Reserve controls that. There's a demand for money, and the public and financial institutions control that. So whether policy is easy or tight really depends on the interaction between the two. So let's say that, you know, theoretically the demand for money triples. You could have the supply of money double. You still have a deflationary collapse on your hands. So the key here with monetary velocity is that's not something the Fed can control, but it's something that they can offset if they have a coherent forward-looking policy. That's at least what the market monitorists believe.
At this point, though, if you're pushing on a string, if demand just won't rise no matter what the Fed does, where does that leave them?
Well, the market monitorists would argue that, you know, the pushing on a string liquidity trap argument actually doesn't accord with the facts. We actually saw the Fed get traction even in the mid-1930s with zero short rates. The QEs have not been powerful in the U.S., but they have had some influence. We have some nominal GDP growth. It's not been strong, but it's something. And nominal GDP is just the right side of the old equation of exchange, MV equals PY. So the pushing on a string argument I don't think holds up to close scrutiny. But, you know, in an environment where there's a lot of pessimism and, you know, in an environment where interest rates are low, you can have a very high demand for money. So, you know, that will require the central bank either to work through the expectations channel, you know, or to take aggressive open-ended
action. And they aren't doing that now?
No, they are doing that. And I think it's helping. You can see it in financial conditions. You can see it in some of these other higher frequency indicators. So,
but we're not seeing it in final demand, as you're saying.
Well, I think we're starting to see it. We had a nice pickup in Q3. Nominal GDP was almost 6%. Now, most forecasters don't think that that will continue. But if you look at the best high-frequency indicators out there, the Chicago Fed is a very interesting index of monetary and financial conditions. It's a good leading indicator of nominal GDP. It's consistent.
It's not as good as a Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index, so there.
Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index, excellent, also saying basically the same thing.
Yeah.
We're likely to see a moderate step up in the growth of nominal GDP. And over the short run, that'll deliver more real GDP also if the economy's depressed.
I was kidding. Chicago and Cleveland do some great work with these different indicators. Michael Darda, which camp is Chairman Bernanke in? Is he a Keynesian? Is he something from another time past waiting for the market to solve? Or does he take that middle ground like the esteemed Mr. Sumner of Bentley College?
Well, I think Bernanke is basically an eclectic. You know, I don't think that he would shoehorn himself into just, you know, one model. I mean, he's been part of the new Keynesian tradition, which is sort of, you know, a combination of some of the monetarist insights and some of the old Keynesian insights. But, you know, Ben Bernanke, I think, clearly believes that this downturn is an aggregate demand-side downturn, which is, you know, why he's made the efforts that he's been making. If he didn't believe monetary policy could help in any way, then he wouldn't be doing what he's been doing.
How long does he keep it up?
Well, I think he, you know, he's told us now with this new approach where the Fed has a goal, a numerical target, not just for the inflation side, but for the other side of the dual mandate, unemployment, they keep it up until, you know, they believe the U.S. economy is closer to potential until we're closer to a fully employed economy, with the critical caveat that the Fed won't tolerate inflation over a two-year horizon projected going above 2.5%. So this isn't a, you know, a 1970s-style unemployment target without any, you know, reference to
what that. Are you more worried about disinflation right now? You look at the PPI numbers and where we've been going with prices?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the headline inflation data, I mean, I think those get moved around a lot by what's happening with energy prices, and I'm not in the camp that believes the Fed has been driving those. I think it's more China and global growth. I don't think there's an inflation issue at this moment in time. The key here is, you know, getting the economy to grow fast enough to reduce slack, you know, over a longer period of time. If the Fed overshoots, there'll be some inflation, but we know how to deal with that. You just tighten monetary policy.
Michael, in the time we've got left, we've had an economic frenzy here of discussion. How do you link this over to markets? Is Michael Darda optimistic on investment in 2013?
I am, Tom. So we think that global markets, particularly emerging markets, will do very well this year as China accelerates modestly. I don't think they're going back to unsustainable boom conditions, but I do think there'll be an acceleration in emerging market and global growth, both from, you know, China and other emerging markets. And the Eurozone, we think, will exit recession this year. It's not going to have robust growth, but it will have growth. So global growth does better. We think the emerging market equities outperform domestic markets.
Right.
The S&P, I think, will do well this year. You know, our target's 1575, so in percentage terms, not as much as we saw last year, but I do think we'll see all-time nominal highs on the S&P this year.
Well, that gets your attention. Michael, thank you so much. Brilliant. Michael Darda, MKM Partners.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.